Hi everyone, I'm Charlene Sheth. Welcome to Women Who Win. I am excited to share this very special interview for our Women in Healthcare series with Dr. Maha Radha Krishna. She previously served as the Chief Medical Officer of Biogen, and she brings years of experience in the healthcare space. In today's interview, we are going to start from the beginning of her journey with the lessons and obstacles she learned along the way, and then we'll move into industry trends that she's most excited about, such as AI and digital health. And we'll end our conversation with learning more about who she is outside of the workplace and her next big dream. Thank you, Maha, for joining us today.
Thank you, Charlene. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me part of this Women Who Win series. And I also want to thank all the organizers, Dr. Manjushet, Dr. Deepa Zaveri, and everyone else who are part of this unique group of individuals who are really championing the cause of career development for women. And I very much appreciate this opportunity. So if I were to just start a little bit about myself, I was born in India in Bombay, Mumbai now, and grew up in a household where my father was an engineer consultant, my mom was a homemaker, a younger brother. Very early on in life, I got this bug of needing to gravitate towards medicine. And the reason I say this is because my mom was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes right after she had me. So growing up very early on in the household, I knew what it meant to take insulin 3 times a day. I knew what it meant to check your blood sugar. I knew what it meant to understand what the comorbid conditions and complications of diabetes could be. And in spite of my mom's most tight blood sugar control, she did end up becoming affected with many of the complications that diabetes brings. And because of that, my ambition or my goal to be a physician was even more strengthened. So as I went through high school, biology was one of my favorite subjects and graduated high school and always wanted to, my passion for medicine grew. And because it also grew because I knew that just like my mom being a patient, each and every one of us could be a patient. And I needed to be out there to help people, to people in need, bridge the unmet medical needs and bring innovations to them.
Nice. I love that. And I'd love to learn more about as you moved into the healthcare space, you started your career as a physician and you actually studied in Russia. I would love to hear more about that as Women Who Win is a global platform. And I think our audience would love to learn more.
Charlene, thank you for asking that question because I think that is a very important phase in my life. It was formative in many years. In many years, it also made me who I am. It made me truly appreciate what it means to be global, what it means to really look at the diversity in thoughts, people coming from different walks of life, different countries, different cultures, different languages. But to backtrack, the reason I went to Russia or the former Soviet Union back then was I could not afford my medical school in India. My parents could not do it. And back then, the concept of student loans or working your way through medical school did not really exist. So it was my dad. I should give all credit to my parents, my dad in this case, who ended up seeing the small commercial in a newspaper that talked about an exchange program between the USSR and India, where students in medicine and engineering and some other specialties were given scholarships to go and study in the USSR. And India, on the other hand, other programs where they invited students from the USSR to come and study in India. So one thing led to the other. And we had extensive dialogue at home. My mom was not very supportive initially, but then she knew that my goal, my passion was to be a physician. So ultimately, with the supporting of both my parents, I was able to enroll because my merits were pretty good. And so off I went. It was back in 1988 when I took the step of flying out of India and landing in Moscow in the September of that year. Little did I know that I was landing into a foreign country in the middle of winter, not knowing the language, different culture, different cuisine. And I was telling Charlene earlier this morning as we were chatting, I was a vegetarian, and to be a vegetarian in such a country was next to impossible. So I did not really realize what I was getting myself into. So I would say back then, you didn't have this concept of I have a cell phone, let's call my parents. I'm going to text. I need to take and connect with my mom and dad. No, there were no phones. So the only thing that was there for me was letters. So pages and pages and pages of letters with tears saying, I can't do this. This is too much for me. This is very hard. And but I will tell you this is that one thing my dad and my mom always told me is that they were always with me, supporting me in every decision I made. And if I did say I was not going to be able to make it, they would make sure that they were able to get the money from one of their friends to bring me back. I just say that because, and on the other hand, I have to give a lot of kudos to the educational system in the former Soviet Union, where they are rooming you with Russians. They're integrating you into the Russian education system where for the first 10 months of you landing there, you're speaking nothing but Russian. Your teachers know your language. They speak English, but they don't speak English with you. They're there to help you to really integrate yourselves into the mainstream of the country as soon as you can. So you're living with Russians, you're going to school, and if so, the subjects I studies was biology, chemistry, physics, math, and Russian, obviously. That was a medium of instruction. So I'll tell you, within 10 months, they get you to a point where you are feeling comfortable enough to be going into the university medical program along with Russians. And 4 months in, my dad read science with a long letter, says, "Are you ready to come back?" And I read that and I'm like, "Oh no, this is when I'm going to surprise my parents." So I write a long letter back and I say, "Dad, mom, you don't know your daughter yet. I'm your daughter and I have your genes and I am not coming back." And so that
Love
was
that.
one of the crucial turning points in my life when I made it that I will survive this. I'm not going to drown. And from then it was everything went upwards. I graduated medical school with honors. I got the red diploma, as they say. I loved every minute of my living in Russia, studying in Russia, meeting students from all different countries in the world. It just truly enriched me, Charlene. And so I qualified, I graduated as a physician in internal medicine with a special focus on cardiovascular medicine. And yeah, and I would say that I've been fortunate in my life to have had the opportunity to pursue my dreams and also become a physician in spite of all odds.
Wow. And I think one of the things that, and there's an expression that I love, which is when you're out of your comfort zone, it's where you discover who you are. So I think your
Yeah.
story is really a testament to that. I'd love to learn. So you've had pretty extensive leadership experience in the pharma and
Yeah.
healthcare business side. What was that transition like moving from physician into the healthcare administration and the pharmaceutical world?
You know, I'll tell you this is that many things in life happen serendipitously, but you have to be open to possibilities and open to opportunities. So I practiced as a physician for about 7 years. And then when we finally moved to the US, when we got our visa and paperwork cleared, I was applying for my board exam for my seats. I had cleared my board exams, applying for my programs. And again, very serendipitously, I get a call from a headhunter saying there's an opportunity to join a publication agency to really be able to think about medical education and publications for one of the key CNS programs for J&J. And I was like, I have no idea what this is because I'm a practicing physician. I love seeing patients, and it's all about clinical care for me. But our daughter was very young. So my husband and I talked through it. And I said, rather than not knowing where my residency program would be placed in the US, is it okay if I take a short sabbatical and try this out and see what it means to take a step into the publication side? My husband was like, "Yeah, go for it." And that tells you, right? My husband's been my life partner for the last, I would say, 33 years of my life. I met him when I was in Russia, and we've been together since then.
Really?
And
Wow.
if not for him supporting me like my parents have, I would not be who I am today. So I
Yeah.
joined Reed Elsevier as a publications lead for the Janssen CNS programs. And within 6 months, I was recruited into BMS because they were launching Abilify as an atypical antipsychotic in the psychiatry space. In those 6 months, I'll tell you, Charlene, what became very clear to me was all along in the back of my head, I knew that as a physician, I'm able to help only one patient at a time. Patient comes in, I diagnose, I treat, the patient goes away. In some cases, there's no follow-up. In some cases, there are follow-ups. And then when I joined the industry, what became clear to me is a physician scientist can have so much more impact being on the pharmaceutical R&D side. You're behind innovation. You're behind how transformative innovations and leaps are being made. You're able to think through what outcomes truly matter to patients. Not just physicians, but patients and regulators and payers. So you're able to holistically think about how do you bring the value of a product forward. And this was a true eye-opener for me, I'll tell you. Launching Abilify in psychiatry at BMS as my first role in Princeton, New Jersey, was the best thing that could have happened to me. Because to me, it really made me realize that I could be playing a bigger role in population health. In patient population health. And that's exactly what I've done all through my careers. It's now 22 years that I've been in pharma, 21 and a half, and I've loved every minute of it. I've been across therapeutic areas, across different positions, across geographies. And I say this, right, is I've been able to take calculated risks. I am a risk taker, but I don't jump off the cliff. I'm always thinking about What is a way to take calculated risks because patients do not have an extra hour? So
Right.
as a physician, as a scientist, as a person working for pharmaceutical R&D and commercialization, I think we have to be out there trying to say, how do we carve new, how do we trailblaze in this field?
I love that. And in your most current and recent role in at Biogen as a CMO, how did you set the same culture for your teams? What was your leadership style?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, I place a lot of emphasis on being humble. This is something, and being grateful for what we are doing and what we've been given. For me, leadership is very simple. Be humble, be curious, show empathy. So show compassion, show that you care, and show that you're there for your team. So listen, be a careful listener, and you make a decision. You don't always have to make a consensus-driven decision, but you've got to let the team know why is it you're making a decision, right? And at the same time, always keep the patients at the center of what you do. And I say this because I'm a healthcare professional, but I know the audience has a numerous variety of professions. Always think about the end goal and always in your mind calculate what will success look like. And based on that, I'm always there saying, you're a leader for your team. You've got to have their back no matter what. My success is not because of me. My success is because of my team. I am who I am today is because all along I've been fortunate to have stellar talents on my team, amazing human beings on my team who have just poured in countless hours of efforts, time, and energy into advancing therapeutic innovations forward in the field of healthcare. So for me, as I say, is compassion, humility, empathy, communication. I'm a very direct communicator. I tell people I believe in strength-based feedback. I don't believe in giving feedback on the negatives. But it's all about bringing out the positive aspects of a person and making them even more impactful on what they do. I also believe in being a mentor. So I'm very happy always to be open to reach outs from people, strangers, doesn't matter if they have questions, if they want to just talk to me, understand what they could be doing or should be doing differently, the doors are open.
I love that. And that actually brings me to another question. I think a lot of powerful women often have a woman in their life that they really admire and that they really learn from. So I'd love to know, is there an empowered woman in your life that you look to?
I have a few, just bear with me. I think the first woman, the first and foremost, is my mom. The way she fought her life, her condition, with always a smile, being happy no matter what, afflicted with diabetes, retinopathy, neuropathy, cardiovascular disease, nephropathy, every complication that I said before, but she never, ever gave up that smile. Even before she passed, she had a massive stroke. We brought her to the point of trying to get her rehabilitated and recovered. She did not lose that smile. And she always taught me that. She says, never give up. Life is not easy. Life is not a bed of roses. And you gotta persevere and you gotta be strong. And so my mom is my role model. And the second woman I look up to is Mother Teresa. And she is someone who I look up to in terms of the compassion, the caring, the humanity, right, that she brought in. She did not have to do what she did in the slums, but she
Right.
did that, right? And she did that and she's left a legacy. So I'm hoping that the little contributions that I bring in are leaving behind a legacy for the generations who are watching us to say it doesn't take a lot to care. It doesn't take a lot to say thank you. It doesn't take a lot to show people that you truly, genuinely know them. Just a simple example of remember names of people. No
Yes.
matter who they are, it could be the janitor, it could be the person in the kitchen, it could be the person who's cleaning your office, or it could be someone high up. You address them by their name and thank them for what they do. They become your friends for life. My mom and Mother Teresa are the two women who are my role models in life.
I love that. And I think what's so important is to have that sense of empathy and really lead with empathy and empowerment. That's wonderful. I would love to know, so in the healthcare industry, like we're seeing like a lot of like emphasis on digital healthcare and the use of AI and data analytics. What is your perspective on this? And are there any innovations that you're most excited about?
I'll tell you this, Charlene, is I am personally very intrigued, excited, and interested to really understand the breadths and depths of what artificial intelligence and machine learning can give us. I know in some parts there is some bad rep in terms of is it the right thing, is it not? But I think that we have to jump on board, we have to get on the ship, and we've got to think about how this applies to the work each and every one of us does. So in healthcare, it could be used across a broad spectrum. AI could be used as part of drug discovery, identifying targets, screening through massive libraries for which for a human brain would take ages. but you did run it through an AI program, it could be done pretty quickly. You bring it through clinical development, artificial intelligence and machine learning could be used to identify patients and demographics, identify comorbid conditions patients support with, scan tons of data to really think about where is it the ideal patient is for your programs. Also be able to model out what the outcomes would look like if you were to add in certain clinical trials into your studies. Fast forward, you move the clinical development and you're getting a program closer to launch. It helps you identify who are the treaters, the physicians, where do they sit? What kind of patients do they have? What comorbid conditions do these patients have? Who can be a potential responder to treatment? And that's what is more exciting to me is precision medicine. Precision medicine means many things to different people. It could be as simple as predicting behaviors, predicting biomarkers, starting with blood, or using things like wearables. Right, you got the Apple Watch. The Apple Watch is a wealth of information. You know, I've got friends at the MIT who are pretty high up in the digital side, and they are doing some phenomenal things in terms of robotics, artificial intelligence, wearables to really think about how is the human biology interfacing with the real world. And I know you and I chatted about this. AI can also be used in marketing and digital communications. So that's where you want to really understand the preferences of the people in the real world who are the end users for the information that we're pushing out. The scientific information, the commercial information. You want to understand if, for example, so you're a physician in the audience, I need to know how is it you like to learn? What do you want to learn? What are your gaps? How can I fill it? And how regularly should I fill it? And it's not easy. And that's where you start thinking about using some kind of machine learning tools to understand what are the digital tactics I need to be putting in place for you to feel that your needs are taken care of. So I would say the utility of AI is very broad. It's up to us now to say, okay, what of that are we going to take and apply into the work we specifically do? So I am really excited, as I was telling you this morning, on Monday morning, I'm headed off to the MIT for another course on patient engagement and MI, and A, sorry, machine learning, AI, patient engagement, and wanting to learn more from the best.
Nice. I love that. And I think what's really interesting about you is because you have this physician background, but then you also have the healthcare business background, you see it from both lenses, where you see it from like the doctor perspective and the patient is the customer in a way. What do you think is the concerns or hesitations that doctors might have, or what are the differing like viewpoints you might see between like physician and industry on AI?
I think for a very long time, and I'll say I was a victim of this as well, is when you're a practicing physician, you look at pharma as the dark side, as it's all money making, it's all about revenue. When you move into the pharmaceutical side, what you quickly become aware of is R&D cannot survive if money doesn't go into investing into the R&D programs. And for every one program that gets successfully approved, there are thousands of programs that are being killed, because they're not reaching the threshold of success from either a safety standpoint or an efficacy standpoint or a regulatory standpoint. And then finally, from a commercialization standpoint, where you need to also be able to get the right price to be able to reinvest back in the R&D cycle. So it's really opened my eyes. And anytime I sit down with physicians, this is how I start off saying, I'm one of you. I started off as you, right? But then I'm on the pharma side and I talk about needing to realize the balance between realizing shareholder value and patient health. And that's where, you know, role as a physician, as a business leader comes in to say, I need to make sure that my teams and myself, we're always thinking about if a program is advancing to the clinical pipeline, what is the value it's going to provide to the patient, to the physician, to the regulator, and the payer. And I always say payer because I was fortunate enough to spend 4 years of my career at UnitedHealth Group here in the US, which is obviously, as we know, one of the biggest companies in terms of insurance and payer coverage. And what I quickly learned is there are physicians on the payer side too. They're not there to just slap us and say, this is too high a price. They're there to sit with us, have a discussion on what clinical endpoints are truly meaningful. And how do we design programs integrating those endpoints so you can really quantify the value of a program? When I say value, it's medical value and the economic value. You always have to justify why you're giving a certain price to a medication that's getting approved, and that's the economic value. So it's time spent employed, it's productivity, it's absenteeism, it's caregiver burden, it's direct costs, it's indirect costs. It's a science on its own. And that's why I say that. It's our job to make sure that we're sitting with the different stakeholders, whether it be physicians or patients or healthcare or regulators or payers or policymakers, to really sit down and explain what is R&D and what does it take to bring a product successfully to patients. So it's I would just say that I love what I do and it's a fascinating space to be in.
I love that. And I think that I think that you've had such extensive experience in the space, and it's really cool to see how excited you are about the future of it too. And moving into sort of the professional development that you've experienced over the years, I would love to know for women like me who have more of a business background, for example, that are looking to work on this AI and kind of the digital space, but also women who are coming from the healthcare space directly too, what is your advice in this space in general in terms of building a career?
I would say first and foremost is network. Try to reach out to as many people as you can. Networking is very important from the standpoint of understanding what the other person does. Like you and I, Charlene, we've talked couple of times, and I already know where your interests are, what your passion is, what you want to be doing. And I'm also intrigued because someone as young as you is already thinking that way, right? You've got a marketing background, but you want to go into healthcare and bring in AI. It's fantastic. So networking is first. Second is speak up. So if you've not read it already, read the book Lean In from Sheryl Sandberg. I think it really teaches you the importance of having a
Great
seat
book.
at the table and leaning in and speaking up. Very important because I think personally, every one of us has important points to contribute. Some of us are shyer than the rest. And growing up, I was an introvert. You would not have seen that now. You would say, Maha, come on, cut it off. But I was an introvert. I had to force myself to start to engage in conversations, talk to people, become more extroverted, become more people friendly. So I would say for those of you in the audience who are watching this show, do not hesitate to speak up. Show your confidence, show your subject matter expertise, because that is truly what gets you the recognition. And then the ripple effect of that is you will end up leaders around you, your peers around you, noticing you, and that's how you build your sponsorship. You always make sure that you need to also find a mentor, a person that you can have confidential, open dialogues on in terms of what's working, what's not, what's keeping you up at night, what your ambitions are, and the person should be able to guide you in terms of where can you go career-wise, what decisions can you make. Sponsors are those unknown, unsung heroes that speak on your behalf at critical decision-making points that relate to your career, that you may never know this person is your sponsor, but your mentors are the ones that are going to guide you every step of the way in terms of how you get there. And lastly, I tell people is never feel, since you may be the most junior person in the room, that what you say is not going to add value. What you say may be the most important thing that is ever made point-wise in the room of people. And you will very soon realize that it's hugely, I would say, the energy you get by starting to add value when you get into meetings and contributing to dialogues is just infectious. Rather than, I tell people, go, don't go join a meeting to attend a meeting. Go to attend a meeting to participate in the conversation. And if you feel you have nothing to contribute, then make sure, feel free to decline the meeting and give a reason why. Or even ask, why is it you're being invited to the meeting to begin with? What are the meeting objectives? What do they hope that you can contribute to? And what do you think they are hoping for a successful outcome if you were to join the meeting? So I would say just be bold, be fearless, and speak up.
I can relate to everything you just said, especially being early in your career. Like a lot of the times you question, oh, like, why am I being included in this conversation? Or what is the key value I can bring? And so I think that's really important advice. Thank you so much for sharing that. And
Welcome.
as we come to the end, I am sure a lot of us would love to know, how do you find this work-life balance? And what do you like to do outside of work?
For me, I tell you, I meditate, I do yoga, I pray, and my family is my foundation of support. They're my lifeline. So I always make it a point to have a proper work-life balance. Yes, when I'm traveling, when I'm at work, my family knows I can be crazy busy. But they know they always come first, no matter what in life. My daughter, my husband, obviously, my parents are gone now. They're everything to me. And in my free time, I love cooking. I love baking. I love just spending time. I love walking. We love traveling as a family. I just am a very simple person. I do not internalize stress. Life can be very, very stressful. And this is another thing I've learned from my mom. Stay happy no matter what. And I tell people, what reason do I have to be stressed when I know that I'm so blessed? I just walk into a hospital or walk into the streets and look at a homeless person, and then you will understand perspectives matter. Right? So work life to me is work, life, and well-being. Don't ever forget your well-being. Different people have different ways of getting to it. My well-being is my meditation, my yoga, my family, my chit-chatting at home. And people tell me, Maha, let's go outside, let's socialize. And I say, guys, every free moment I get, I usually like to spend it with my family. I do socialize, don't get me wrong, but my family comes first.
Nice. And I think, and I love that accidental expression you said, which was when you're stressed, you think about how blessed you are too. So thank you so much, Maha, for joining us today and sharing your story on Women Who Win. I cannot even describe how inspiring you are, and I'm so excited about everything you are doing. So thank you so much for sharing your journey with us today.
Thank you, Charlene. Thanks to you and the organizers. And I have to tell you, Women Who Win is just the wow factor. I think you're creating a flash mob. You are creating a momentum, putting a velocity behind it for women, anyone who watches it, no matter what sphere of the industry you come from, this is the place to come to and learn. And I'm here. I'm very open to being contacted if needed, if I can give any advice, if I can share any of the learnings I've learned in my life, not just best practices, but also learnings. I'm very happy to do that. Thank you
Thank
so
you.
much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us for an inspiring and thought-provoking conversation with Women Who Win. For more stories of women leaders around the globe, please follow our Spotify channel and check out our website, womenwhowin100.com.